Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by conservative Brent Hamachuk, conservative Kenton McCarthy, liberal Roberto Montaño, and Democrat Socialist Anthony Joel Quesada. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Radio Hall of Fame in Chicago, the Paul and Angel Harvey Radio Studio. Nice to have you with us this evening. And again, there's lots to talk about because after we went off the air last week, as you know, we talked about Pete Buttigieg dropping out of the race right before we went on the air. And then, of course, it has been a whirlwind week. We will talk about the politics of this week. But again, I do want to begin with the other big public policy and political story of the week, and that is America's response coronavirus. Kenton McCarthy, thank you very much. You're one of our card-carrying conservatives this evening, coming in from Arizona to join us. What is your take thus far? And give me the short version, everybody. What is your short version thus far of how the administration is handling the coronavirus?
This administration?
Yes.
It reminds me of what Donald Rumsfeld said years ago. We don't even know what we don't know yet. So the data is incomplete. We're getting lousy, probably deceptive information from China. We see it sprouting in all parts of the globe, and we get conflicting views. We have some people, even scientists, will say the mortality rate is no more than the common flu, and then someone else will say, yeah, it's three or four times. We still don't know. We're fumbling around for a solution.
Roberto Montaño also joins us, one of our Democrats. Roberto, what's your response?
Hats off to Michael J. Talley, Brigadier General of U.S. Army Research at Fort Detrick. They're leading a group along with the CDC and NIH. So I love government because it can stand up at times like this and really, really provide for an apolitical solution. So
are they?
They are, definitely. So best and brightest minds, universities are all contributing. We have, and the private sector is kicking in too. So there's opportunities that are, that will be compensated for labs, like Quest Labs is ramping up significantly. I don't own stock or anything, but I'm just saying it's a collaborative thing that is beyond what I would say this administration's, manufacturing. This is a crisis that the president did not start. And he's having a hard time, in my opinion, getting a hold of it. But thank God we have institutions that are doing their job.
I want to follow up on that. But Brent Hamachuk joins us. Brent, nice to have you with us. Another card-carrying conservative. Good. Nice to have you back with us. Your response to how government is responding and this administration is responding.
Right. Look, I'm not a disease scientist. I don't have any way of understanding the details of the disease and is the CDC doing everything it can or should. Mm-hmm. Seems to be fine. I'm satisfied. I don't see anything happening that frightens me. I'm very disturbed. I think the much bigger story than the virus is the way the American media and the Democratic Party are using this virus. I think that is appalling. And it is so transparently obvious that they're trying to create a panic. They're doing everything they can to create a panic.
I want to come back and talk about that at length, but I want to bring Anthony Joel Quesada in. Nice to have you back. It's been a while since you've been on. You're a Democrat Socialist.
Democratic Socialist.
Democratic Socialist.
Yeah.
So step back and give us your assessment from your young age, your tender years. How do you think the government is responding to this crisis?
I recall President Trump being at a rally denying the threat of coronavirus or calling it a hoax, which is very irresponsible.
He as called being Democrats a hoax.
Correct.
He did not call the disease a hoax.
Okay. Well, just still weird language, and it's not responsible language to be talking about a very serious public health concern. And so I don't think the administration has taken this seriously, but beyond what the administration thinks, we also don't have the kind of public health care infrastructure that's needed to meet, the demands of a crisis like this. I hear that there are only about like 80,000 respirators in the United States. Well, let's say this virus does get worse and there are more than 80,000 people. How is our government and our healthcare infrastructure going to be able to meet the demands of people who are struggling with this virus and struggling with different illnesses?
Let's just focus on that.
Sure.
The CDC, have they been caught short at this point, in your view, Kent?
Everyone's caught short, especially bureaucracies. You can't plan for an infrastructure to be capable of responding to this type of eruption. The only people that knew about this virus months ago were the Chinese. We still don't know where it came from. So if you're going to say that governments around the globe should be prepared and have these kind of facilities and materiel on hand in case of a virus outburst, you're going to have a lot of people saying that's wasted money.
Is that what you meant,
Anthony? What I'm saying is, at this moment in this crisis, we either have coronavirus for all or we have Medicare for all. And if Senator Sanders were to have become president back in 2016, and we would have fought for a single payer healthcare system.
You're bringing it into the political discussion. I want to save that until later. I want to focus right now.
Yes.
People want to know if their government is acting as best they can, and you're saying
I think our government is not acting as best it can, and furthermore, I don't think our public healthcare infrastructure is not suited to meet the demand of a crisis like this, and we need to fight for one that can.
About a year ago, we had an officer which was like a czar for these sort of endemics, and the president said we don't need that and got rid of it. That was a policy decision. He got rid of an essential component that would have coordinated some of these efforts. Now, that being said, Democrats are doing their best, and some Republicans are great, and we're working together. A bill just passed that was $8.3 billion of appropriations. It passed 96-1. The one vote against it was Rand Paul because he's a libertarian. And he thinks whatever. But I think the government's responding. That being said, the president hasn't led because he doesn't know what's going on.
Well, when you say he hasn't led and he doesn't know what's going on, is it his utterances or is it – I mean, I've seen him at press conferences where he has deferred to the experts from the CDC.
He also claims that he understands because he had an uncle that went to MIT. Like, that's not a credential.
We live in a culture where everything has to be spun, including this White House, to the best political posture. So if you're dealing with a existential threat, a shock to the health system and the economy, like the coronavirus, if he had stopped all flights inbound and outbound to China, he'd be labeled a racist. And he probably still is, okay? That's one way to isolate yourself from the threat.
What about if he does it to Italy?
He probably should because Italy is doing it to itself.
Right. And so I'm saying, Brent, I mean, is he making a mistake by not including Italy?
Look, he would have my support in doing anything that he felt it was necessary to do in terms of shutting down travel into the United States. I'll tell you one thing. With regard to having this president in this moment in time, I am certainly grateful that we have a president who believes in America first and the sovereignty and security of borders, as opposed to one who doesn't. Because for whatever he may or may not do, anything we would have gotten from, say, the last administration or potentially the next administration, or say if Mayor Lightfoot were president – this is a lot better.
Okay, as you can tell, we have a lot of people here. They want to get into the politics of it. We're gonna try another segment without the politics, and we'll save the policy. And then, I trust you, we will get into the politics. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Exhibit from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay tuned. Rock on TV. Artifacts from the Jackson 5, Sonny and Cher, Elvis, Cyndi Lauper, ZZ Top, Eric Clapton, and more. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street, Chicago. From Bandstand to Gaga, let's rock on TV. For info and tickets, visit museum.tv.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture, the right to know about the economy, the right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Oh, we're coming back. I wish we could send out maybe to those listening on the internet. We just we just keep running with what we talk about during the breaks. Something that you brought up, Anthony, and that is whether or not the health
infrastructure.
Apparatus and infrastructure of the United States is ready for something big like this.
Yeah.
And I think there could be debate. I think Kenton is right. We have 300 million, you know, needles ready to give people inoculations. We won't even have the virus. That's another issue, that big political and science issue. But I want to get back to the issue of testing, because one of the issues this week was testing. And I flipped on the TV the other day, and Donald Trump was he was walking through the CDC with his red hat on. It drove me crazy, by the way, that he had his red Keep America Great hat on. I don't think that was, for a guy that wants to be presidential, I don't think you show up in your campaign rally hat. I think that was wrong. But he basically said during the course of that, and, you know, if you want to be tested, you go to your doctor and you get your tests. And basically he was saying, get your tests. And then like 4 hours later, I'm watching the vice president with his press conference at the 3M company, and he's saying, well, no, we're not, doctors aren't ready to give tests out. I mean, to me, that was a huge miscommunication on the part of the administration. Do you agree? I mean, do our Republicans agree with that?
Brenton, we had a conversation before the show started. We were talking about, and this is as bipartisan as I can get, is that America is very good at catastrophes, good at huge shocks. Internally or externally. Okay, war.
New Orleans.
Economics, yeah. So on.
Houston.
We're really lazy when it comes to the day-to-day stuff. So if 8+ billion of this goes to testing kits and respirators and this virus dies off in 2 months, he's going to be accused, or any administration will be accused, of wasting money. We're really lazy when it comes to the day-to-day affairs. We're good at the big stuff, like World War II. Until this virus hits us like it has Italy, won't allocate the right resources.
Brent.
Let me answer sort of the question you asked. One of the problems we have in American politics today in general is that we think that if somebody's our guy, we're supposed to defend our guy in everything our guy does.
That's true.
So could in wearing the hat, I love the irreverence. The statement about go to your doctor, get a vaccine. Am I going to say that was a smart thing to say or a good thing to say? No, it probably wasn't. Honestly, I couldn't care less. And the reason I couldn't care less is I don't have to feel like every single thing the president does is done perfectly. I'm not that guy, but I
But Brent, this was basic information. The focus of that day was testing. And you have the president in a cavalier way in the morning saying one thing, and the vice president, who's supposed to be the singular spokesman, is saying something else a little more factual. I mean, that's the point. I like the idea when the president's standing there and he's saying, okay, Dr. Fauci, come on up here. And when he's passing it around, I feel really good because
Don't deify Fauci. He can change his viewpoints as he has before.
He's got the safest job in the country at the moment, think.
But you're also
Chris, jump in. I think we've clearly seen after many years with this president that he doesn't know what he's doing. Very rarely does he even know what he's doing. The fact that he was instructing Americans to go get testing, and we clearly don't have the infrastructure for testing, is just another, you know, tale of the story of the president. But what I'm also really concerned with is that advice of just telling Americans go to the doctor. Well, guess what? A lot of Americans can't afford going to the doctor. And again, speaking to the lack of actually people-focused public healthcare infrastructure in this country, people are drowning in debt, and we need to make sure that people can go to their doctor without worrying about going into debt, and also have paid sick leave. So if they do get sick, they can stay home and not, you know, get the public sick and expose them to this virus. So I think all around, this country is set up for disaster.
Does the president also have a responsibility, as I think he demonstrated this week? He's got an airline industry going in the wrong direction. He has a cruise line industry that's probably going out for at least
capsizing.
A decade. I mean, I don't know who's going to be taking cruises anymore. But the question is that he's got to try to keep all these things afloat, no pun intended, and at the same time, without scaring the hell out of the people. Is he doing a good job at that, Roberto?
If he was, the market would be responding, but nobody's flying and nobody's taking those cruises. You couldn't pay me to get on a cruise. So if that's the metric, is he supporting those industries? No. I think the better metric—
Would you take a flight?
I would, but I've been vaccinated again because I was in the Army. Okay. Malaria, dengue, yellow fever. Like, I'm an unusual case. I would not put my children on a flight if I had kids. I don't have kids, but I wouldn't. And I think a lot of people would keep their kids.
Flights are cheap.
Look, wait, one last thing. Loyola University canceled its summer program to Italy, right? And those parents have means, and those kids are crushed, but too bad.
Have we demonstrated to the world and to the Chinese the United States could easily go into a panic? Because the media will act and react in a way that will jack everybody up and have universities cancel trips to Italy and have someone play a hockey game yesterday with nobody in the audience.
It's Putin taking notes right here.
It will be a welcome panic because there's a lot of people, no offense, but there's a lot of people at this table who see the upside in this virus in advancing Medicare for all.
It's not a political opportunity. What we're doing is we're trying to take care of our people. And right now we have a healthcare industry that is running off a profit, which is not prioritizing people's needs. We have the best healthcare in the world. Let me just say, we have to have one person talking at a time.
So let me recognize everybody, and everybody's going to get a chance. Kenton, finish your point.
I was just going to say, we have the best healthcare system in the world because of the profit motive, not despite it.
Yeah.
Okay, Roberto.
To rephrase Quesada's point, I think that investments in human capital, healthcare, and education lead to productivity. I think we can agree to that if you want to look at it from a capitalist model. And healthy people are more productive. Amazon just told all of its workers, stay home. Or with Apple, I'm sorry. Apple just told all of its workers, stay home. But if you're a waiter, if your job is to run a kitchen, you can't stay home. And first of all, you can't afford to stay home. So there's a bill in Congress now, which isn't getting a lot of votes. And this is where I'm about democratic incrementalism, right? I think we're getting in the right direction. That says we ought to set aside sick leave for this particular issue. And if it's not this issue, there'll be other. If it's a pandemic, people ought to be able to stay home because that's just good for everybody.
Yeah.
So can I go back to your question?
Yeah, back.
I love when people
go back to my question.
Yeah, let's go back to your question.
I spent a lot of time thinking these questions up.
Are the Chinese learning that Americans can be made to panic? Absolutely.
That's exactly what they're learning.
Everybody's learning. So what we're exposing in this is sort of what, 60, 70 years of living in such a high degree of comfort. We are so wealthy, we are so fat, we are so opulent that we have lost our nerve and people are coming unhinged. I live in the North Shore area of Chicago with all the super wealthy folks, all the very woke folks, social justice, all those things. What are they doing? They're cleaning out Costco. You can't get water or hand sanitizer. I mean, so much for the general will and the greater good. Mm-hmm. They're panicked. And yes, our enemies are watching and they're seeing how soft we are. It doesn't mean you don't take a measured response to things. It doesn't mean you don't use common sense and good judgment. It does mean you don't lose your mind. And people are losing their minds.
Not everybody. I mean, people are having.
Of course, not everybody.
Most people are busy, and like this comes on if you've got time to watch MSNBC or CNN. But like people that I know are going to work and then they're taking care of their kids and they're going to school. I do jujitsu. It's fun for me. I blow off steam. We are in our face, grabbing the other guy, pushing, sweating. There's no drop off in the gym. I mean, just not everybody's
freaking
out. It was
in mine this morning. Yeah. Highland Park Gym almost empty. On a Sunday morning when it's typically very full.
Well, I'm from the Lower West Side, so maybe the Lower West Side is different.
It must have been Pilates.
Is this a direct link? And I want to come back to you, Anthony, because you certainly have reason to be critical of the news media as well and the way they handle, you know, victories by Bernie Sanders and the glee with which they report his premature demise, perhaps. How much of this goes right back to the news media and the business of the news media? And part of it is to inform the people. And by informing the people that people are running and taking off things at the shelves in Costco in Winnetka Is that a viable news story, or does that feed people running to other places taking things off the shelf?
How much do
the American people really need to know about this subject and the ramification of this subject?
I think, you know, we should have a very responsible media, and unfortunately we have a sensationalist media. We have a media that is run based, again, off profit. Why aren't we bringing, you know, scientists from the CDC to give, like, a daily update about what's going on and best practices and whatnot? Be calm and responsible.
The news media does that. I mean, I don't fault the news media on having the news conferences. They've had a news conference virtually every day. Mm-hmm. And again, they usually have the experts there. I mean, sometimes when the president speaks, you know, whatever he says is going to be the lead story.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Unfortunately, because he may not know as much as some of the scientists.
Oh, he definitely doesn't.
He does not.
Yeah, he does not. And that's the problem is that.
But
the
here's
media
something
would,
else. Yeah. Somebody said the other day. Well, he made some comment about, you know, maybe a miracle will cure this. This was like, I think, last week.
Right. No, we need vaccines.
But you say, oh boy. But you know what? There's a lot of people out there, and they're not just all conservative Republicans. There's a lot of people out there who are of faith.
Praise the Lord, but wash your hands.
Just a minute. They do believe in miracles. So complete for a politician to say something like that, he isn't saying, you know, go take a prayer and forget to wash your hands. Okay. But again, you can't dismiss people of faith as well, factually.
Amen.
The economy is not working for everybody, especially those in jobs where unscrupulous businesses keep wages lower by hiring millions of illegal workers. Those businesses could use the government's E-Verify system to prevent illegal hiring, but they refuse. What's best for the country? Let businesses continue to hire illegal workers, or require E-Verify, raise wages, and recruit left-behind Americans? See what voters want at eVerifyWorks.com. Paid for by Numbers USA, because numbers count.
Every year, millions of Americans use opioids to manage pain. And reliance on opioids has led to the worst drug crisis in American history. That's why the CDC recommends safer alternatives, like physical therapy, to manage pain. Physical therapists treat pain through movement, hands-on care, and patient education. No warning labels required. When it comes to your health, you have a choice. Choose physical therapy. Visit moveforwardpt.com to find a physical therapist in your area.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We are engaged in a great discussion of policy, and we're going to get into politics in just a moment. But let's let our four guests introduce themselves, and we begin with Brent Hemichuk.
Hi. I am the director for policy research for the American Populists, which is a new group started by Jeff Webb. Jeff is the founder of Varsity Brands, so he's been a cheerleader for decades, and now he's a cheerleader for the middle class. And we're working on policies to support middle class economic health and well-being.
Roberto Montaño also joins us.
Roberto Montaño, a regular neighborhood Chicago guy, and I don't know how I get on this show, to be honest with you, but I'm grateful.
You know, people have been asking me about that. No, I'm only kidding.
You're a regular neighborhood guy. I'm running a couple
for
of
those
campaigns
around the country. What does that mean to be a Chicago regular neighborhood guy?
That means I worry about my backyard a lot. I worry about judicial races, for example. People don't care about those normally.
I know.
I work passionately to get people into the judiciary. It's often overlooked. So, like, I won't name drop, but I have a friend. She's candidate number 232 on the ballot.
Wow.
And so somebody's got to fight for those people. And I think that makes a difference. So I'm here for that.
Well, I think the motto is if it's better to vote all no than all yes. It's so much easier because we have long ballots in Cook County and Chicago, Illinois. Kenton McCarthy, tell everybody who you are and a little bit about your background.
Kenton McCarthy, born in suburban DuPage County. This marks my 28th year of being on Beyond the Beltway.
Wow.
The first time was with Jesse Jackson Sr., and I thought it was going to be my last.
Yeah.
ended up teaching a semester at Malcolm X College on business and finance. Spent 25 years on Wall Street, then started my own firm called Vulcan Consultants, and I help cities manage their portfolios and keep them out of trouble. It was named after my great-grandfather's company. He started fresh off the boat at 1600 West Lake Street. in 1916.
Excellent. And what the company? And what was that company?
Vulcan Stamping. Vulcan. It became Vulcan Containers, and you know the background.
Anthony Joel Quesada.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bruce.
How are you?
Doing well. This is my, again, my name's Anthony Joel Quesada. This is my fourth year on Beyond the Beltway with you, Bruce. Thank you for having me. I am a lifelong resident of Logan Square. I am currently an organizer with the Chicago Democratic Socialist, with United Neighbors of the 35th Ward, which is an independent political organization, and I'm a candidate for Democratic Committeeman of the 35th Ward. My vision is to unite millions of poor and working class people in our country, but around the world, to fight the very real crises, you know, of climate change, of lack of adequate healthcare, of education. I believe in a world that can work for all of us and not just for the rich few.
Okay. Logan Square, my old neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
When I was your age, I was organizing for conservative Republicans. How about the ward has changed quite a bit?
Yes.
There weren't many conservative Republicans then either. Right now, on a point of a personal privilege, I want to just take a moment to offer my condolences for those listening around the country. You came from Chicago, you certainly know the name Lee Phillip. She was the first lady of Chicago television. She had a remarkable career. I had the pleasure of producing her program for CBS 2 Chicago in the late 70s and early 80s. She, along with her late husband Bill Bell, they created The Young and the Restless and The Bold and the Beautiful, two of the most successful daytime dramas of all time. She was a terrific person on and off the camera. I learned a lot from her. She was a very gracious lady. She passed away at age 91. And again, word just from yesterday, if you grew up in Chicago, and this may be a shock to a lot of people around the country, Clark Weber, who was the morning man on the legendary WLS, he died at age 89 yesterday. And again, a giant. One, a true giant of Chicago television. The other, a true giant of Chicago radio. Both passed away within days. And again, we offer our condolences to their families. Let us go back now to a question to everybody. I want to get into the politics of it. Anthony, you seem to be the most interested in getting involved in this. Why should, or let me say this. Explain to the people who are watching and listening to this program tonight, who are very fearful when they hear the name Democratic Socialist, and they're turned off to Bernie Sanders because they're believing all that's been said and written about Democratic Socialism. Why should they give your political philosophy a second chance or even a first chance?
Yeah, I mean, right now we have to look at the current conditions, economic conditions and social conditions, political conditions that Americans across this country are living in. I just came back from the East Bay of California, Oakland area, and I saw swaths and communities of people who are living under bridges, in tents and tent communities. Similar thing back here in Chicago. I know that, you know, people are working 2 to 3 jobs to get by. Rent is unaffordable. Their rent burden, which means that they're paying more than 30% of their income on rent. People are struggling very hard. And while there are millions of people who are struggling, you have the three richest people in this country who own more wealth than the bottom 50%. Right now, about 40% of new income in the United States goes to this top 1% in our country. This is unsustainable and this is immoral. What democratic socialists like myself believe in is fighting for economic justice, fighting for racial justice, fighting for environmental justice, fighting for social justice. It means uniting millions of people who are poor, who are oppressed, who are working class together so that we can fight for our own collective good.
Kendon McCarthy,
can I answer that?
I want you to respond to that, especially I want you to start with the immorality.
That's where I was going to start. That's where here's my beef with socialism, or what I call actually socialism today is now run by Bolsheviks. Two problems with socialism. First, it's never worked. Second, its necessary ally is tyranny. Those two things are the biggest threats we have via socialism. Bernie Sanders didn't honeymoon in Copenhagen. He chose to honeymoon in the Soviet Union. Okay.
So, and to you that
well,
may,
if you if you have a, if you have a
boogeyman,
if you have a, if you have a, if you have a, if you have a generous social welfare system, that doesn't mean there's nothing inherently wrong with that.
Right. Let me stop first of all. My quick follow up, because he honeymooned in the Soviet Union.
that sends a very loud signal to you that it may not send to Roberto. What does it mean to you that he honeymooned there?
Can I get back to the morality thing?
Yeah, no, but I want you to answer. I want you to answer the honeymoon question first, and then I want to.
Here's what I do like and respect about Bernie Sanders prior to him getting woke or wokeified over the last few years. Here's a guy who believes in the economic model. He comes at it as an outsider. He's as much an outsider to D.C. as Trump was. He comes at it from the approach is this is what I believe in. This is what I think can or should happen. And he's been true to those principles since he was probably a kid, which is terrific. He's honest as authentic. Far as that goes. The problem here's where he's going to fail is when you introduce the word morality and you start scolding people. And if you don't adhere to his socialist model, you're somehow immoral. Remember when Robert Novak, the Catholic, wrote about the morality of capitalism?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who founded capitalism based it on moral principles as well.
I want to go back to Anthony. Where has socialism succeeded?
We have socialist programs here in the United States. We have our public library system, right? All that socialism means in a very simplistic manner, and when we're talking about priorities of our revenue and how we are spending money, right, in our budgets, is are we investing it into the public? Are we putting it back into public hands? Are we putting it back into public access? Or is wealth being held off by a private few?
Is there a country on the face of the earth where that has worked?
So I think this question, because I think a lot of Americans tend to do this. They try to put people in a corner and say, where has socialism worked? There have been socialist programs across the country that have worked in terms of healthcare, education, and the public good and housing. This happens all over the place, and it's happening right now. It's a living thing. It's happening in Cuba. It's happening in Sweden. There are aspects of Venezuela that worked out well. There are many things that didn't work out well, but what is important to know is that we can and should be investing our wealth into the public and not into military, not into exploiting other people. It can happen. We just need to have the political will and courage to do so.
Brent, address the point of exploitation of
look, I the fact that there's poor people living in America is absolutely true. The poor will always be with you. I think it is terribly unfair that you want to sentence those people to permanent poverty by turning the means of production and control over to the state to have it centrally managed. That's what socialism is. It's really collective control. It's replacing individual decisions with collective decisions. Now, I would love, by the way, I know I can't do it. I'd love to come back and do a whole 2-hour show on this because this is my thing. Here's the problem with socialism. Nothing is new. We're looking at something today that started back in the time of Plato, it went to Rousseau, and then it went to Marx, all right? That's the daisy chain. Everything that's ever been written and proposed with regard to socialism is predicated on one key must, and that is human beings have to be inherently good. And if they're not, then what you wind up with, if you move to this model of collective decisions, you get something that looks a little bit like Jeff Goldblum in The Fly. You get somebody who goes through that transformer. They're a little bit beast. They're a little bit man. And it will be monstrous.
Roberto Montaño.
I think it was FDR who said that we have capitalism for the poor and socialism for the rich.
Martin Luther King?
Yeah. I think they both said it, actually. But in any case,
yeah.
You have the
what's the retribution?
The Ryan tax cuts, which effectively was a huge windfall, a wealth transfer from the poor to the rich. That's kind of a socialism. When I can choose to say, if you're a tax taker.
A new exhibit from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay tuned. Rock on TV. Artifacts from the Jackson 5, Sonny and Cher, Elvis, Cyndi Lauper, ZZ Top, Eric Clapton, and more. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street, Chicago. From Bandstand to Gaga, let's rock on TV. For info and tickets, visit museum.tv.
You have the right to know. the right to know about culture, the right to know about the economy, the right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Back in Chicago, 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to call us, 1-800-723-8289. And Roberto Mattano, you were making a point about socialism and capitalism.
Sure, sure. Thank you.
Each of it exists.
Thank you, Bruce. So we really have a blended economy, and we always have. And so, and there's some critique that would say that we have socialism for the rich, and they get handouts and tax breaks, and we have capitalism for the poor. We're bootstraps when you don't have boots. I would say, as a Democrat, I'd like to echo the Paul Wellstone sentiment, which is we all do better when we all do better. There has to be a place for retraining of those union employees that aren't going to get those factory jobs back. There has to be a place for investments in human capital, like healthcare, for Corona not to kill us. But then you have a Republican platform. A night and day to me, just real quick, is the former governor of Illinois, Mr. Bruce Rauner. And he, the first thing he does is he cuts higher education funding by 31.5%. And that kills almost a third of the middle class that's trying to better itself. We almost shut down Chicago State University, UIC, the public institutions that we're supposed to be investing in. And so to me, when we talk about like socialism, educating people so they can better themselves, giving them the tools they need to be healthy, that is not what I would call socialism, but it is a collective approach.
Let's let Kent.
I don't know if you remember this. 20 years ago when I was on with Jesse Jackson Sr., we were talking about the inner city, and I said, if the problem is economic, then why is the solution not economic? And that's what led me to teach at Malcolm X. If I were Trump, I would look at every impoverished community in the country, especially those that are minorities, and I would build dedicated VOTAC training and train these people skills, practicable, workable skills that are valued in the marketplace.
Because now, he said that in the State of the Union, he addressed that.
He did, but wasn't specific. But I'm old enough to know Jack Kemp's enterprise zones too. Okay,
you're talking about vocational training for those.
Exactly. Yeah. Why? So. And this goes back to culture. If LeBron James says the pathway for inner city kids is either entertainment or sports, those are one in a gazillion odds for any of these kids. And anyone who goes down the path of learning, training, working is treated as an outlier. Those are cultural issues that have to be addressed.
And just to go back to your point, If there's a young person who wants to get started in life, what is your path? What is if capitalism did not exist, what would be the path for them to graduate from high school and make a living for themselves and their family?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think some of my colleagues here to the left misunderstand about socialism is that it's not about state control. It's about people in control, right? It's not about this tyrannical, you know, government that's controlling every single decision. No, it's workers in their communities who have control of their workplace, who are able to guide how the economy is moving and how we are producing things in the collective good. One moment, please. So what does it look like for people like my age who are trying to come through? Well, we can't go to school because it's too expensive. Or if we go to school, we're drowning in student loan debt right after. There is a struggling economy that's not really working for us. We have to juggle 2 to 3 jobs just to get by and barely get by. This kind of economy is not
Anthony,
right.
Yeah. Anthony.
Yeah, go for it.
What is the job they have? They graduate from high school. Mm-hmm. Don't they have to go to some place that has been founded by a capitalist or some capitalist has invested money to create a snack shop, a gas station, a retail store, whatever it is? Mm-hmm. Don't they then get sucked into a capitalism way of living because there is no alternative? You can't go once you graduate from Schurz High School or whatever, you can't go and say, well, I'm going to work in the social service sector because I'm not going to get paid enough to live happily ever after with myself or a family.
I think you're confusing a market as being something that only lives within capitalism. A market can exist under socialism, and it should. It has to. That's the markets will have to exist as humans exist.
But what are the markets? That's what I want to know. So what I want to. I'm looking for a simple answer.
Yeah,
to what do they do?
So you can still go to your same job, but is there a boss that is denying you your workers' rights? Is there a boss that is taking a larger share of the profits for himself?
The answer is yes.
You wage slavery, right?
Keeping you. So who corrects that?
Who directs it?
What mechanism corrects that? Other
workers who are actually controlling their workspace and get to
workers,
share,
you mean government.
No,
I said socialism's necessary ally is tyranny. There has to be.
No, that's incorrect.
It is correct. How do you correct the inefficiencies of the marketplace unless there's some sort of governmental mechanism which overrides it, ostensibly to the aid of the worker?
What were you going to respond to?
No, you can respond to that, and then we'll go to Brent.
Okay. So as a socialist, I believe that we need to transform our economy, right? We need to
These are nebulous, platitudes, but I'm saying, how do you address – if you say we have to be market-based, how do you address the inequalities that the market necessarily produces? Because we are all unequal. We have to be unequal for a market-based economy to work.
I don't think so. And I think that's an outdated – I mean maybe that's what's gotten us to this point in human history, but I think it's outdated.
To what point?
I'm saying this – the market, like capitalism, has brought us to this point in human history.
What point? What is so dire about this point?
Can you let me speak, please?
I'd be happy to.
We need to evolve from this system, right? Same way we evolve from – slavery, we need to evolve from capitalism.
I would say it's devolved.
We need to stop exploiting one another across this planet, and we need to start cooperatively creating an economy that
works
for all of us.
Everybody to your corners. We've got a break. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly with another full hour of Beyond the Beltway. We'll hear from all of our guests and your telephone calls.
About how much someone drinks.
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
My name is Bobby. I'm a veteran and lost my leg to a roadside bomb. My victory was going from a wheelchair to becoming a weightlifting champion.
I'm Sam. I'm a veteran. My victory was finding a career that I could be proud of.
At DAV, we're on a mission, helping veterans of all generations get the benefits they've earned.
I'm Cece. My victory was finishing my education.
When America's veterans win, we all win. Help us support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
The economy is not working for everybody, especially those in jobs where unscrupulous businesses keep wages lower by hiring millions of illegal workers. Those businesses could use the government's E-Verify system to prevent illegal hiring, but they refuse. What's best for the country? Let businesses continue to hire illegal workers or require E-Verify, raise wages, and recruit left-behind Americans? See what voters want at eVerifyWorks.com. Paid for by Numbers USA, because numbers count.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes from loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Let's head west to Santa Cruz, California, where Liz is listening to us on AM 1460. Go ahead.
Well, let me see how quickly I can talk because the dog has to go out.
Okay.
Okay. Now, first of all, I do want to say the person, I didn't get his name, who was talking about platitudes and all that.
Yeah.
He's right on, you know, and it's not, let me just turn the radio down, please.
Yeah, turn it down, yeah, because we're on a little delay here.
Yeah, okay. Okay, now it's not what is said that's the problem, you know. The problem is something much more important. The problem is one has to experience, for example, two sides of the story here. They're both the same sides. But either you have to interview people who have visited and they're able to understand the language, okay, either from Cuba, from Russia, from Romania, et cetera, and Venezuela. You know, you have to talk to the people that live the life, okay,
mm-hmm.
and to see what these people talk about what the facts of life are really like, you know, like to tell you how they have. I mean, it sounds wonderful. It all sounds wonderful. We're all going to eat. We're all going to go to school. We won't have to pay. You know, it's wonderful. And I'm all for that, sure. But the problem is we have to go there. You have to visit the country. And
right, and unfortunately, a lot of people don't have the opportunity to do that. I know, you know, Bernie
exactly.
Sanders.
That's why I say, or you need people from the country to tell you how they wait for 4 hours online
sure.
to get their meal for 2 weeks. And what's the meal look like?
Right.
It's two slices. It's two bread. You know, two packages
right.
of bread. A couple of sardines. You know, and I forget the third. You know.
No, I know, part of that is, as you say, engaging with people. And you know, several years ago,
mm-hmm.
I went to Cuba, and you know, I mean, people, you know, they were literate. This mm-hmm. was, you know, talking about what Bernie Sanders talked about, the literacy rate,
yeah.
and they do have health care, but they make $20 a month. $20 a month is the average salary. I don't know how people live on $20 a month. Brent Hamachek
okay.
has a comment.
I'm sorry.
Stay on the line, Liz. Stay on the line. Go ahead.
Because I have to. The dog has to go out.
Okay. Let the. All right. Go ahead. Let the dog out, and
please,
then we're going to go.
Please let the dog out. I did not want to be responsible for that kind of an accident. Although it's fitting when we're talking about socialism, that sort of a mess. Look, to go back to where we were at the end of the last segment and to tie it into this call, what we're talking about is the problem inherent in this system that requires, and it is about, by the way, collective decision making, people making decisions on behalf of larger groups. Who's going to make the decisions? How are they going to get the wisdom and knowledge to make them? And oh, by the way, the complaints you have with free markets, with free exchange, is that there are bad folks doing bad things and people are exploited. So the question becomes, what happens when they walk through the doors of government and then they start to make decisions on behalf of us? Is there magic dust that suddenly transforms them from the evil free market tyrant into some sort of benevolent and wise government leader? Of course not. If they're dreadful on the outside, they're dreadful on the inside. And I'd rather take my chances making my own decisions than having those decisions made for me.
Anthony.
So speaking on some of the realities that – was her name Liz?
Liz.
Well, let's look back here in the United States, right? We have millions of foreclosed homes. We have 500,000 people who are living homeless. We have a lot of kids who go to sleep hungry, yet we have stores and shelves full of food. This economy is not set up in a way to meet people's needs. It is not affordable. You have other countries like Venezuela, like Cuba, that are struggling because of the economic sanctions that the United States imposes on them because they're not playing the same ball. They're not playing the global capitalist game, and so they're being punished for it. I just had a friend, my best friend actually, who went to Venezuela for 2.5 weeks, and he reported back on some of the social conditions and how people were very happy living in their homes and whatnot. But there are very real struggles that exist, but it is because of the vice grip that the United States has over the Western Hemisphere, over economies and countries like
but
Venezuela.
There, but you talk, but you talk, oh, you yeah. earlier on, you were talking about life in San Francisco and some
yeah,
of the
absolutely
the mm-hmm. life. But the point is, in many cases, there are municipal programs and there are federal government programs for those people to partake of, and they
no,
don't take.
That's not true. That's not true, Bruce. I work in city government here, and I know that there are homeless communities in my community who need that kind of help, and those resources just do not exist.
But,
you have 10-year waiting periods for an affordable housing unit. That's unacceptable.
Wait a
that
minute.
That is unacceptable.
Wait a minute. If you're going to try to make the argument that we don't spend enough money on poverty in this country, that is an impossible argument to make. Since the 1960s forward, we have spent trillions of dollars. All it has done is just what Daniel Patrick Moynihan predicted it would do. It has exacerbated the problem. It has torn apart families. It has taken away initiative. We have spent so much money, and yet the problem gets worse. The idea that somehow spending more is the solution, I'm sorry. I mean, reasonable people can differ, but I'm not going to buy it.
Here's where socialists get lazy. First of all, they're the first ones to smell flowers and look for a funeral. Second of all,
really?
Yeah. I mean, this country is the grandest country on the planet, and because you saw a few homeless people in East Bay,
hundreds of people.
Then take
who
it up with Gavin
like
Newsom.
That.
If you can fog a mirror in this country, you're going to get.
Existed before Gavin Newsom.
You're going to get food. You're going to get housing. You're going to get medical treatment. Okay, the largesse that we provide for the poor is staggering. Socialism doesn't work, and the only response to socialism's failures is it wasn't applied properly. That's lazy, and people are tiring of it.
Go ahead, Roberto.
So there's a couple of structural issues that we have to talk about before we talk about lazy people, and that is how hard it is to get a job sometimes. Mm-hmm. We just, thank goodness, allow people that are not guilty of a crime but being held in county jail to vote. That was a big push. And if you come out of incarceration, if that happened to you because you come from a community that doesn't have a lot of opportunities, chances of you getting a job are very, very low. So we're asking people to go get a job. Now, I have American Legion in my neighborhood, and we go out and we feed our fellow veterans who happen to be homeless. Mm-hmm. And there's these camps all over Pilsen, which is in Chicago, sorry. And in any city across America, I think you'll find that there are people who have had opportunities that they did not have. Okay, there are rich people there, and there are. It's not a lack of. It is so hard to be poor in America.
It's expensive to be poor.
It is expensive to be poor in America, and the bottom line for me is not that there are rich and there are poor. For me, the issue is the lack of social mobility. Like, I have a friend who struggles to get insulin. He's going to go blind. And he works every day. And it's just, it's appalling to me to hear that we don't do enough when you compare it to what we spend on other things.
When
like
we come back, we're going to follow through on that. We'll hear from the capitalist. You're a capitalist as well, but
right.
We're talking about, and you want to talk about some of the downsides of capitalism.
Sure.
From our Republican. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Rod.
A new exhibit from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay tuned. Rock on TV. Artifacts from the Jackson 5, Sonny and Cher, Elvis, Cyndi Lauper, ZZ Top, Eric Clapton, and more. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street, Chicago. From Bandstand to Gaga, let's rock on TV. For info and tickets, visit museum.tv.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Chris Dumont, back in Chicago. Can you finish that story? Is it an on-air story? Oh, go ahead, finish it. Kenton McCarthy's got a tip for you.
No, I flew here on an airline that may or may not be based in Chicago, and I asked, because I'm a loyal customer, and I asked the flight attendant, I said, are there any more heightened precautions being taken given this virus scare and blah, 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 on at least domestic flights? Because I came in with Clorox wipes, and my girlfriend did the same thing. We wiped everything down. She said, no. I said, so the ground crew is not doing anything more than they usually did? She goes, no. She hasn't seen a mask. I didn't see a mask. I saw one mask at O'Hare.
Yeah, you want the mask to drop down.
I don't know. But she says the risk is more on international flights. But domestically, there's
– You wanted to make a point. We're going to get back to calls in just a moment. But you wanted to make a comment. Our first hour, we talked about coronavirus. You want to make a point about how it's – what its impact is on capitalism.
Capitalism – here's how I grew up. I grew up in the U of C, Milton Friedman, Cato, Reason, Wall Street Journal editorial page on capitalism. Okay, free markets, let capital and labor move where it's treated best. That has advanced to the point where the global corporations and the transnationalists have created an integrated global system of just-in-time, which is great as an inventory model, but we're so interwoven that we can't stand the shocks like Corona is doing to the system. In other words, this plays into the hands of nationalism. If most of our medical supplies are outsourced to China, how has capitalism, raw capitalism, helped us currently?
So,
and that's where I think the U of C school is dead, the Wall Street Journal editorial page is dead, and Davos Man is dead.
Do you think there will be more manufacturing jobs returning to the United States that are medically focused jobs?
I would hope so, and I would think someone in D.C. would have the wits to suggest that.
Go to Mexico. I mean, supply chain's right there. You've got technology right there. Monterrey is a mammoth of manufacturing already. It's easy to tack on healthcare. Wouldn't
that be a good political position to have if you were to say,
yeah,
I'm going to bring jobs back to the United States and we're going to make, 3M is already making masks.
How about
masks,
we don't care about that and just do what's helping people for real? Like, look, if Israel's got a solution, let's talk to Israel. If it's Mexico, let's talk to Mexico. If it's Texas, people in Texas have been doing research like crazy in Atlanta.
But if it's Americans who have the ability to do a job, why would you not give the job to an American over a Mexican?
Well, if you believe in free markets, then you're going to go wherever the most efficient solution is.
What if you're doing something?
We went to China. China came to the WTO and said, I've got 400 to 600 million illiterate farmers that can be converted to manual labor cheaply, and you can outsource all your manufacturing, and you can Walmart's supply chain comes from China.
Right.
How is that helping us?
One second. I want to go to Brent, and then we're going to Anthony.
So a couple things. First of all, the point you're making relates to the first point you're making about the interconnectivity of supply chains. This ties into the work that the smartest human being in America put together several years ago, Nassim Taleb, and the notion of being anti-fragile. And he talked about the fragility of large systems. He's the guy that came up with the black swan. What we've done through globalism and through also domestically, like with our banking system, which is now very centralized, very siloed, very big, we have made ourselves incredibly fragile to any sort of systemic shock. So that's not about capitalism. Capitalism, by the way, the only economic system ever that wasn't invented, it just growed. All right. It's the natural thing that happens when you have property rights in free exchange. It's something that takes place. So it will go wherever it goes if a country decides, for national security reasons or otherwise, to say deals with this country are a bad idea, limitations here are a bad idea, surrendering our manufacturing of key items out here is a bad idea. That's not disrupting free markets. That's making a national security or other sort of decision in which free markets will work just fine. You can't stop them. They're like life on Jurassic Park. They find a way.
Anthony.
Can you restate your question? Was it about bringing the industry of – the healthcare industry, bringing those jobs?
I'm talking about what a lot of people are saying now, I think, is why is it taking so long to get test kits?
Mm, yeah.
And why is it going to take so long to get a virus, to get a vaccine? Well, though, I mean, there, you can't really speed up vaccine research. You know, the president kind of cringes when Fauci says 18 months,
yeah.
Maybe 18 months. I don't know whether you can speed that up, but it would certainly, whether you're making masks or you're making test kits, as some of those things are being made in China or involved in material in China, I don't know why some of those things or more of those things could not be made in the United States. And we may be at a point now where the American person is going to say, let's make them in the United States. Maybe I'll pay a little bit more for them. Yeah. But damn it, they'll be here, and we won't have to wait 6 months
for
them. But
ordinary working-class Americans don't have control over the economy now, do they? Now, it's corporate boards and CEOs who are making decisions to maximize their profits, right? So, of course, they're outsourcing jobs because they want to pay lower wages to workers that also have less working rights, that don't have union representation. We could have those jobs here in the United States, but it is American workers who need to be at the helm of decision-making, not corporate CEOs who are trying to maximize
or
profits.
Or corporate CEOs who understand that we are in a crisis situation now, and the American public, the consuming public,
right,
is demanding a faster turnaround on the making
right
of a product.
Right, but
so maybe raising the cost of the product would not be something that they would run the opposite.
Right, and nor do I think a profit-based market when it comes to people's health is the most efficient and most responsible way of meeting a crisis.
Okay, let's go back to Roger. Roger's listening to us in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Let's go back to the Central Time Zone. Hopefully you changed your clock last night. Roger, you're with us. Go ahead.
I changed many clocks. Thank you, Bruce. Always good to be on.
Thank you.
On with you. Anthony, gosh, you've got the talking points down really well. I got to give you credit. You know, there's 12 million people in this country that are working more than one job. That's it. 12 million. That's the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You know, you say we're going to evolve into this socialist, improved society. You might go back to 1917 and look at the Bolshevik Revolution, which is kind of what you're advocating, and almost 20% of their population died in that revolution because you think that these owners of these businesses are just going to hand the keys to the front door to their employees, and then you make this absurd claim that, oh, well, they're going to run this thing better and fairer and all this. That's kind of like being on an airplane at 10,000 feet and having the guy next to you who used flight simulator once on his computer take over the pilot's job. You know, people have skills, sir. And these people that don't have homes, that are homeless and don't have the best jobs and stuff, they need to get skills. They're a victim of their own choices to a large degree. people have to take some level of responsibility for their lot in life.
Yeah,
everybody can't just be handed something. That's a recipe for disaster, dude. You got to earn it. There's got to be some incentive, man.
Listen.
Okay. Go ahead.
My dude, here, listen to me on this one. So your airplane metaphor. No, I'm not advocating for the the passengers of the plane to take control of the plane. I'm advocating that the pilot and that the air flight attendants, know best their working conditions, and they should be the ones advocating for the things that they require, not big wig corporate CEOs who are trying to, again, maximize profits and don't care about the working conditions of the people or the conditions of consumers. That's why you sit in those really uncomfortable seats and workers are trying to fight for fair wages and their healthcare is being put on the line. What I'm saying is we need an economy that's run by workers and in their communities because they know what's best and they know what's happening.
Can I support
Roberto?
And yes, we need to overthrow the ruling class of this country.
Roger, go ahead.
You also claim, we got to have this free Medicare for all. Look, Medicare is a system that it was people paid into decades before they can get it. Medicare has premiums that those people have to pay in. It is not free health care. And I don't know a single doctor, nurse, or a hospital guy that doesn't want to get paid for all of their years in school and all of their training and all of their skills, because that's the way the real world works.
The National Nurses United, the largest nurses union in the country, has endorsed Senator Sanders and has been on the front lines for fighting for Medicare for All for years.
Medicare for All is false advertising.
Oh.
It isn't Medicare, because the caller is right. You paid into that. It's more Medicaid for all. Isn't it more Medicaid for all? It's free health care for people that don't have money and can't pay for it. Don't have to pay for it.
Right, but people are paying for Medicare when they, people's income taxes, right? They're also, we're paying far more.
I pay into Medicare. Right? I have a Medicare supplemental. I mean, I make that decision.
Senator Sanders' Medicare for All plan calls for eliminating copays, eliminating deductibles, and premiums, right?
Costing trillions of dollars.
Right, but that's prioritizing the money, the wealth that we are generating here in the United States, also making sure that there's mass wealth redistribution from the rich who are just sitting on their wealth, the wealth that they took from us, and making sure that we are creating a program that can meet the needs of every single working
American. 15 seconds to you, Roberto. You want to follow up
on
this?
Sure, Roger. So to the airplane thing, it was Boeing who didn't tell us that those 737s were dangerous, and it was the flight attendants that brought up the alarm. It was the pilots that brought up the alarm. They said, we're not going to fly them anymore.
But they didn't listen to the workers.
They were eminently...
You guys are agreeing, is what I'm saying. It's not a pure socialist radical movement. It's not a pure capitalist sublended economy. That's my point.
Roger, thanks very much for your call. We've heard from the West Coast. We've heard from Central Time Zone. I'm looking at the board here. I know you're going to all wait around for this. The Eastern Time Zone reports next on Beyond the Beltway.
The economy is not working for everybody, especially those in jobs where unscrupulous businesses keep wages lower by hiring millions of illegal workers. Those businesses could use the government's E-Verify system to prevent illegal hiring, but they refuse. What's best for the country? Let businesses continue to hire illegal workers, or require E-Verify, raise wages, and recruit left-behind Americans? See what voters want at eVerifyWorks.com. Paid for by Numbers USA, because numbers count.
Every year, millions of Americans use opioids to manage pain, and reliance on opioids has led to the worst drug crisis in American history. That's why the CDC recommends safer alternatives, like physical therapy, to manage pain. Physical therapists treat pain through movement, hands-on care, and patient education. No warning labels required. When it comes to your health, you have a choice. Choose physical therapy. Visit moveforwardpt.com to find a physical therapist in your area.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks for joining us from coast to coast and border to border and around the world. And I promised you the voice of the Eastern Time Zone, and that is Phil in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, listening tonight on POTUS Channel 124 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Phil.
Hey, guys. How are you doing? Hey,
okay.
Quick question for Anthony.
I'm a popular guy tonight.
Yeah, obviously, you're advocating for socialism, and I'm just wondering, tell me a little bit about, people have a choice. They can emigrate, for emigrates from their spot. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to know why or if there is significant immigration or emigration into the socialist countries of the world, so into Venezuela, into Cuba, or even immigration out of the more, we'll call them the more socialist states of the country. We'll call it Illinois and California. If you can, you know, talk about the free choice that people have, why do they tend to either go to those countries as states or not to? You know, tell me about what's going on and, you know, decisions that real people are making.
Yeah, absolutely. There is no doubt in my mind that the economic conditions and social conditions of countries like Venezuela are extremely difficult, and people have the right to make the decisions that they need to make. But we're also looking at destabilization across Latin America in general. People's countries have been taken over by corrupt leaders or by the cartel, and people are escaping because they're looking for a better life, right? Yet when they come to the United States for that better life, they're turned to go away and make your country better and all sorts of things. So it's really weird that, you know, there's this thing that the United States does about saying, fight to make your country better. But then also you can't come here and like make things better. It's really weird. There's kind of a hypocrisy with the United States. But the reality of the matter is I don't know those exact numbers of people are moving in, people are moving out. But what we do need to fight for is, you know, universal solidarity across the country, across the world, where we need to fight for better conditions economically, racially, and socially for everybody.
Phil, thank you for your call. Go ahead.
It's ironic that most of the corrupt politicians in South America were pursuing socialist dreams. It's funny how you get around from South America and sanctions by the bully capitalists, and then you get into immigration policy.
Well,
I mean, it's like herding cats.
His question is around immigration. And it's true that the United States is the largest economic force in the Western Hemisphere. Arguably,
it attracts the most people who are leaving brutal socialist regimes.
Gentlemen, I want to take back the reins here for a second and turn to our Democrats. And Roberto, we'll start with you. It appears now that there's a three-person race,
sure.
Two men and Tulsi Gabbard is still in the race. It was interesting. The discussions today on some of the Sunday morning shows were the way in which women were treated, how they're disrespected. They were following some of the comments made by Elizabeth Warren. And then later in the discussion, they kept back saying, well, it's down to a two-man race. Tulsi Gabbard is still in the race, not likely to win the Democratic nomination. And again, when we look at the current delegates, Joe Biden now has 664 delegates as of the moment. Bernie Sanders, 573. That changed last week when there were the big surprises in Super Tuesday. Super Tuesday, as you know, Joe Biden won 10 states. Bernie Sanders won 4 states. The big, big surprise, I think, was in the state of Texas, where I don't think too many people were predicting, including last week on this program, I don't think people were predicting that Bernie Sanders was going to lose in Texas. But he did, and he obviously ran well in California, although Joe Biden ran better. But my question is, now, since we've got, I'm looking at two of the mono candidates in the Democratic primary. They're all hugging each other right now.
Boy. Because we're going to beat Trump. Why? That's why.
Why? Okay. You want to beat Trump.
Right.
Do you believe that you obviously like Joe Biden? You said you've liked Joe Biden for a long time.
Yeah.
Can a Democrat socialist be elected president of the United States? Bernie Sanders. If your guy loses, will you vote for Bernie Sanders, and do you think he can win the White House?
Well, first of all, for Phil, just so you know, a lot of people go to Mexico for health care because their system is very, very affordable, and there's tons of tourism that goes there. So to give you an example, because this question was on tourism and you know, expats, Mexico is filled with people overstaying their visas, technically undocumented, who go there for health care and for quality of life. To your question, and I wish we could have done more on that, but because I love Mexico. The answer is yes. Anybody who is, whether it's Tulsi or it's Bernie or It's Joe Biden.
Anybody but Trump. You vote for anybody.
It's about policy. It's not about personality. I don't care about what he says or how he insults people.
Why is he better than Bernie Sanders?
Biden?
Yes.
Okay. Well, but let me just be clear. We are voting against kids in cages. That's what we're voting against. And the policies.
Bernie Sanders is for kids in cages?
Trump is.
No, but you are already.
They know that.
Guys, just we want to give them a break here. The Republicans will weigh in on this in a moment. You want to move the campaign to the general election already. I'm asking you, between now and the convention in Milwaukee, 90 miles from here, you could lose. Joe Biden doesn't have this thing locked up at the moment. You could lose to Bernie Sanders.
Well, Michigan is +7 for Biden.
That's next week. Okay. You're predicting.
Yeah, well, it's +7. So I'm not saying it but he's outperformed in Texas. He outperformed in California. Texas and Virginia were amazing. And with respect to the Democratic Socialists in his home state, I'm an old precinct captain.
Yeah.
He went from 86% last time to just over 50%.
Yes.
And on the street, if you can't.
That's not so great.
If you can't carry your precinct, you won't be the captain for much longer. That's our take on it.
Okay.
So the trajectories are that after the consolidation of what I would say centrists, because I'm not really a liberal, of moderates and centrists, we have seen people say, wow, the evidence is in Texas, the early voters were going for, I think I want to say it was about 17% in the early voters were going for Biden. But after they saw South Carolina, they're like, wow, and it doubled.
Are you worried about his age? His apparent diminished mental acuity. Do any of those things worry you?
That is a very, very good talking point that I heard with Hillary. And people slammed her on cognitive capacity because she got sick at the 9/11 memorial.
Oh, she collapsed.
She got sick, right. Yeah. And so she...
Fever, like a heat stroke, right?
Right. There was a moment where she needed a little bit of care and a break, and that's fine. That didn't mean that Hillary was going to be falling apart with malaria. Like, people are making a stutter out to be some kind of diminished...
A stutter?
No one is complaining about his stuttering. All right, let me ask... A quick response. Will you, Mr. Democrat Socialist...
Democratic
Socialist, will you
I'll get it.
Support Joe Biden if he is the nominee?
Yes, of course.
Absolutely.
Of course. Yeah, you asked me this question about Hillary Clinton.
I just want to keep asking you the same question.
Yeah, of course.
Are you worried, as some have suggested, that some of your fellow supporters of Bernie Sanders will either stay home or, God forbid, vote for Donald Trump in the fall, and they will storm out of the convention in Milwaukee if they don't get their way?
I don't think that the amount of people who will pull themselves away from not voting is not going to be incredibly significant. What is the responsibility of the Democratic Party if they're going to nominate Joe Biden, and what's the responsibility of the Joe Biden campaign is to excite millions of people across this country to vote for him and to vote against Trump.
Right.
But if he's not an exciting candidate, then he will lose. And that's my worry is electability.
He's not exciting.
Correct. He's not exciting. Right now
– would you acknowledge that the people that walked away from Hillary Clinton and voted for Donald Trump, would you acknowledge that they were the difference between victory and defeat in some states?
No. Remember, Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes. The problem.
I'm talking about the states that count.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, and absolutely, there are states like Pennsylvania and Michigan, right, where workers were looking for a break from the establishment. That's what 2016 was about. Was a break from the establishment, and what you had was a product of the establishment, Donald Trump, and then you had the establishment incarnate, Hillary Clinton, and people did not want
Joe Biden the same as Hillary Clinton?
he comes from the same wing of moderates that are not exciting, and every time we run a moderate, we lose, right? So right now we need to have an exciting candidate like Bernie Sanders. Exit polls in the states where Joe Biden won, I think, again, the reason why Joe Biden won is because a lot of voters are traumatized. They want someone who's going to beat Trump. And when they saw this consolidation of moderates behind Joe Biden, they're like, that's our guy. People are going around them. There was like a frenzy, and people—
– Why is that going to change? Why is that going to change this Tuesday in Michigan and Minnesota?
I hope it's going to change because Bernie and our grassroots army are knocking on people's doors and talking to people about things like Medicare for All, Green New Deal.
Why has his turnout been down? His turnout from 16 is down.
Right.
Why? If all the enthusiasm
I don't know. I can't confirm what you just said about turnout being lower.
It's true. I'm not making it up.
Because there has been significant increased turnout in younger people and people of color and Latinos, especially Latinos, have come out in droves for Senator Sanders. But I also want to point out that the exit polls in these states also showed overwhelming support for programs like Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, eliminating student loan debt and medical debt. So the program and the agenda is popular. We just need to start making sure that we can make the case that we can not only beat Trump, but transform this country forever.
Anybody but blue. Only blue. Only blue. You're only going to vote blue.
We need to beat Trump right now.
Beat Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. When we come back, there's another side to this little scenario. We'll hear from them when we come back.
Scissors rock to see who gets...
A new exhibit from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay tuned. Rock on TV. Artifacts from the Jackson 5, Sonny and Cher, Elvis, Cyndi Lauper, ZZ Top, Eric Clapton, and more. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street, Chicago. From Bandstand to Gaga, let's rock on TV. For info and tickets, visit museum.tv.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture, the right to know about the economy, the right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
I'm back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Our telephone number is 1-800-723-8289 if you'd like to give us a call. We do have callers on the line. We're going to get to all the callers. And to all of the callers who are on the line, we are going to get to you. You're going to be part of the program this evening. However, we are going to do tonight what we did a couple of weeks ago. We had a lot of activity. We had a very good conversation going. And at the top of the hour when our regular radio show ends, we're going to keep going. So we will be live on YouTube. We will be live on our Facebook page, Beyond the Beltway Facebook page, and we're going to keep going. We'll be taking telephone calls, and we'll also continue this discussion, maybe get a little deeper into the conversation between capitalism and socialism. So stay right where you are. The only people that we're going to say bye-bye to are the people that are listening to us live on radio at this very moment. Again, back to discussion to our Republicans. You heard all this.
I did.
I won't refer to
propaganda.
I heard all of this propaganda
from
your side, from the Democratic side. How do you combat that? And let's say for the sake of this discussion, because we've talked a lot about Bernie Sanders as the Democratic nominee on this program, we have not talked a lot about Joe Biden as the nominee because it was a questionable discussion point up until a week ago.
The Biden phenomena proves a couple of points. First of all, this idea that money can buy access to office is now dead because what we learned from Bloomberg is you can't buy height and you can only buy American Samoa.
Yes.
Okay, that's as far as he got.
Right.
The other thing we learned, especially in the last 2 weeks, is that the Democratic Party, the party of wokeness, which some people call the coalition of the fringes, has managed to blow out gays, women. They're trying to get Tulsi Gabbard, who's probably the most clear-headed voice on that side. They're trying to get her off the debate. They blew out the billionaires, and they have now centered on...
You forgot the, black people.
Oh, yeah. The indigenous people, Elizabeth Warren. The blacks, Devil Patrick never bothered to show up. Booker, they blew Booker out.
So wait,
Kamala, they blew her out. So this so-called woke party managed to blow out all the people for whom they pretend to represent. And they've centered on...
Not the party, though, yeah. Kenton.
Well, there's...
Only the people in the party.
The deep state of the Democratic Party is about as deep as a mud puddle. It's so apparent what they're doing. And my theory is that, this is based on one of my good friends, is that Biden is so rapidly declining, his VP choice will end up being the president inside of 2 years.
Correct.
And I think Hillary is sitting there waiting. I think this has been planned. This has been orchestrated. I think they're going to skim past Buttigieg. They're going to skim past Harris. They're going to skim past everyone who they've blown out.
And she's going to be the running mate?
She's going to be the running mate, and she will take over inside of 2 years because Biden clearly is declining, and that is borderline elderly abuse.
Okay, and that was Kenton McCarthy. Yep. And now, Brent Amichek, so, how are you going to run this race?
There's a lot of ground to cover here. First of all, I mean, it's fun to be in the presence of an actual real a Biden denier who denies Biden change because we have it. Look, let me just say it very clearly. I'm not going to mince any words. I had a mother who passed away from Alzheimer's. I had a father-in-law with vascular dementia. They both look an awful lot the same in the beginning. This gentleman obviously has an early onset of some form of dementia. His behavior is so erratic. The statements he's making are so over the top and outrageous. He got arrested when he went to see Nelson Mandela. He endorsed Trump for president today. I mean, enough. And it's obvious. And it's obvious to everybody. And nobody's talking about it. We're going to see for the first time in American history where the number two person on the ticket is the number one. They're going to package it that way. They're going to market it that way. That means who is picked is... It doesn't have to be Hillary. Could be. I'm still terrified like I was a year ago. I'm terrified of Michelle Obama. If she decides to do it, it's over. They win. So let's say she doesn't. It doesn't have to be somebody big name, but it's got to be somebody really, really polishable who can look presidential. Because there won't be, despite the mainstream media being unwilling to talk about this, there will be no way to hide it. When he's the nominee, there'll be no way to hide it. When he's on the debate stage, you won't be able to hide this.
You said during the last break, Kenton, you think that this is elder abuse.
I do. They're exploiting the mental decline of an individual for political purposes.
And people who are listening to this program will say, we have the President of the United States who misspeaks all the time.
There is no way to compare. No way to compare the things that Donald Trump – look, I get it that people don't like Donald Trump. That's fine. I didn't like the last president. I can assure you I disliked him as much as somebody else doesn't like Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not showing signs of serious mental decline. You might not like him, but he's not.
I guess I would question what the seriousness with what you're talking about. I mean, for instance...
Watch the videos, Bruce.
I've watched some videos, and again, I want to just say that I'm 75 years old, and I misspeak sometimes on this program.
He's not misspeaking. He's saying things that are... He got arrested when he went to visit Nelson Mandela.
That's a lie. That's a lie. That's not misspeaking. That's not dementia.
This is a guy who does not know what massive misinformation.
Right, that's all.
Okay. All right. So what I'm going to say is to our Republicans, to our Democrats, to our Democratic Socialist.
You got it.
He's been a Democratic Socialist since he was a young man, and he still is very much a young man. They are all going to stay here. We're going to continue to take calls at 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. It would have been funny had I forgotten the phone number at that point. We're going to continue to take calls. Again, if you're listening to us on radio, we thank you very much. We'll see you and we'll talk to you next week. If you're watching us on YouTube or you're watching us on Facebook Live, Beyond the Beltway Facebook Live. We will continue in just a couple of minutes, continuing to take phone calls and have a keep our discussion going in the extended edition of Beyond the Beltway.
Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
My name is Bobby. I'm a veteran and lost my leg to a roadside bomb. My victory was going from a wheelchair to becoming a weightlifting champion.
I'm Sam. I'm a veteran. My victory was finding a career that I could be proud of.
At DAV, we're on a mission, helping veterans of all generations get the benefits they've earned.
I'm Cece. My victory was finishing my education.
When America's veterans win, we all win. Help us support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
The economy is not working for everybody, especially those in jobs where unscrupulous businesses keep wages lower by hiring millions of illegal workers. Those businesses could use the government's E-Verify system to prevent illegal hiring, but they refuse. What's best for the country? Let businesses continue to hire illegal workers, or require E-Verify, raise wages, and recruit left-behind Americans? See what voters want at eVerifyWorks.com. Paid for by Numbers USA, because numbers count.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Ironman. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes. From loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.